French.
Hey, I'm Rob McDonald.
And this is the Great Plains Outdoors Podcast.
We're going to talk about everything from fishing and hunting to hiking, paddling, and adventures on the Great Plains. We'll cover it all here.
So join us each episode and hear what's going on in the great outdoors on the Great Plains. Welcome to the Great Plains Outdoors Podcast. We are kicking off this episode on a fishing high, I would say. Rob, Grandpa Fish, and I all got together this past weekend at the Outdoor Communicators of Kansas Spring Meeting, which was at Wilson Reservoir. And if any of you have not been there, I suggest you add it to your bucket list because it's just a beautiful place to fish, hike, camp, you name it. It's just a stunning lake. I sure love going there. We all had some really great conversations and a lot of fun on the water. Rob, I know it was really fun to get out with you and Brent and do some fishing.
Yeah, hey, Brittany, it was a great opportunity to meet up and do some fishing, soak up some of the beautiful scenery, like you mentioned there at Wilson Lake, like the geology and those amazing prairie vistas. Like when you drop down and, you come off the interstate and all of a sudden the prairie kind of like drops down into this gorgeous view of this lake. It's pretty awesome. So make sure that Wilson Lake and that whole wildlife area is, it's a must visit destination if you're coming through the state or looking for a place to hang out, whether that's for just a weekend or, take in. We visited a little bit there at the hotel. Mm-hmm. In Wilson and spent just a little bit of time in Lucas and just a cool region. So Wilson Lake is also known as a productive walleye fishery, and it's also got stripers, smallmouth bass, and a mix of some other species. And it's a saline river impoundment. So the Saline River comes through the state and has a high salinity, and so they kind of claim it to be the clearest lake in Kansas. Mm-hmm. So. And I'm pretty sure that you can attest, Brittany, to the walleye in Wilson Lake.
I can at least attest to one of them. Yeah. So over this past weekend, I being from Southwest Kansas, I've mentioned in other episodes we recorded about fishing is my fishing experience is pretty limited. So I got to go fishing for walleye for the first time and caught my first walleye and came in about 24 inches. So you can imagine how excited I was pulling that fish on the boat. And it was just a pretty incredible experience. My buddy that was on the boat with me is still poking fun at me today because he said I was reeling about 100 miles an hour, which I guess that happens to the best of us when you're excited. But needless to say, after that experience out on Wilson, I'm excited about our guest today because that's what we're going to be focusing on is walleye, especially here in Kansas. So on our show today, we've got Luke Kavalowski, and he works for the Kansas Department of Wildlife Parks in Wildlife Parks and is as a Fisheries Region 2 Supervisor. He has been with the agency since 2014 and was at the Kansas City District Biologist for 8 years before that. He has a bachelor's degree in Fisheries Biology and a master's in Natural Resource Management. When he has free time, he is an avid angler, even though he doesn't get to go out and do it as much. I think we can all relate to that. And he resides in Gardner, Kansas with his partner Emily and two sons, Emmett and Eli. So more recently, Luke and his team have been focused on breeding the next generation of trophy walleye in the state, and we're excited to hear more about that. So Luke, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. We can dive into walleye production in the state of Kansas, but I'll let you kind of introduce myself a little bit. As you said, I'm the Region 2 supervisor, but I've been fortunate enough to have a lot of experiences in the fisheries management career field. I've worked on everything from small streams to large rivers, small pond management and large reservoirs. So pretty diverse in my experiences that I've got to do in the past. I grew up in Northeast Kansas, in the Leavenworth area, and kind of knew at an early age that this is what I wanted to do. I don't think a lot of people coming out of high school, you know, have that figured out quite yet. But I knew pretty early on that with an interest of fishing and the outdoors and kind of ecosystem surrounding it, that that was exactly what I wanted to do. So I took that chance. That's why I chose to go to Kansas State University and pursue fisheries biology. After I finished up there, I was able to get on as a technician for Chuck Beaver, who was the biologist at the time at Tuttle Creek. So I worked as a seasonal there for wildlife and parks. After I graduated, I took a position with the Kansas Cooperative Fish and Wildlife Research Unit, which is housed out of the university, but it's a kind of a collaborative effort between the university, Fish and Wildlife Service, the state agency, Nature Conservancy, and USGS. So a lot of different kind of interested parties there. And I worked as a technician for a grad student who was doing fish distribution on the Kansas River. So I got to experience a lot of the river environment and, you know, the species that occur there. I did that for 2 years. Then I took a position with Nebraska Game and Parks Commission doing pallid sturgeon recovery on the Missouri River. So that was kind of a, you know, another diverse experience working on a big river, running these big giant otter trawls, and working with an endangered species. So that was pretty interesting too. After that, I did that for 2 years and kind of decided it was time to go back to school. So the perfect opportunity came up at the University of Nebraska working on, they had a project where they were conducting all the statewide angler surveys there for the agency, but it was going through the university. So I worked on that statewide creel project for 4 years while I was getting my master's. And then once I finished up with my master's, the district position in Kansas City opened up and it was my opportunity to come home. So I took that and I was the district biologist in the Kansas City area for 8 years, leading to where I'm at now. So in the Kansas City area, the district biologist there, he heads up the walleye project at Hillsdale Reservoir. We've collected walleye eggs over the years at various reservoirs, but right now we are only collecting walleye eggs from three reservoirs in the state, and that would be Hillsdale, Kerwin, and El Dorado. And all the fish that we collect at El Dorado, we only collect the females there, and that goes into sawguy production, and all the sauger come from Perry Reservoir, all the male sauger.
First, I want to back up just a little bit, Lucas, because you,
sure,
you unpacked a lot there. You piqued my interest in several different things that you mentioned, that distribution of fish in the Kansas River. So when this is over, you can send me some pins and I'll know where to go fish the Kansas River. If you know where the fish were distributed at, and for our listeners maybe that don't know, you know, the Kansas River's one of only a few public rivers, public waterways in Kansas that are, you know, contiguous. So, and then you're working with pallid sturgeon in Nebraska.
Yep, on the Missouri River. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So, what, the Missouri River, or the Missouri Breaks, is that starts up in Montana? Is that right?
Yep. And then it flows all the way through North Dakota, South Dakota, goes through several main stem reservoirs in those states. And then below the dam, the furthest downstream reservoir there would be Lewis and Clark Reservoir in Yankton, South Dakota. And pretty much from that point on, it's channelized all the way down to the Mississippi. So you were working
with endangered species dinosaurs, basically, in this river. How many folks you think can say that? Like, oh yeah, you know, my day to day was to go work with pallid sturgeon on the Missouri River in anywhere, really, I guess.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, they're a pretty amazing creature. You know, they've, like you said, they've been around since the time of dinosaurs and really thrived through a lot of that time until the river was channelized. And that's where, you know, the habitat change there has really, they've really struggled with that, and continue to struggle really. But it was an amazing experience for sure. I mean, you get a meter long pallid sturgeon in your hands. It's a pretty awesome experience.
Yeah, that's cool. So, I think Brittany and I, our interest was piqued in trying to contact you to be a guest when we had saw an article about the effort to raise quote unquote trophy walleye in Kansas, and that your involvement in that. And so I'm just curious, like you started on it, walleye in Kansas waters. You know, are those most anglers are familiar with walleye. We've got some listeners that maybe are more into the hunting scene than they are the fishing scene. But if you've got time, just unpack a little bit about, I mean, you were as far as your breeding program and those things, but, you know, what is a walleye? What do they feed on? Where do we find them? Why are so many people, like, why would the department say, hey, we're going to take time, resources, money, you know, whatever, and try, you know, why not? Let's do a trophy bluegill program, right? Why walleye?
Sure. Yeah. So we do every 5 to 10 years, we do a licensed angler, a mail-in survey that we kind of gather the wants and needs of our angling public. And consistently, walleye rank right up there in the top five of most sought-after species. You know, I think the major draw to walleye would be, you know, they make excellent table fare. They're about the best fish to eat that Kansas has to offer. You know, some people, you know, do go for those trophy opportunities. Some people want a higher catch rate. You know, some people like myself, like walleye fishing for the methods to catch them. You know, when I'm walleye fishing, I like to do a lot of crawler harnesses and bottom bouncers, drifting or trolling crankbaits, stuff like that. And I think those methods of catching walleye, you know, draw a lot of anglers as well. A little bit into the management of them, walleye, Kansas is right on the fringe of what would have been native walleye range.
The northern fringe, probably?
The southern fringe. So they're a more northern species. They're,
right, you know, yeah. So we're on the southern fringe of the northern range of the walleye. Yeah, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, so we are right on where they would have, the edge of where they would have naturally occurred.
Mm-hmm. Also, so without the impoundments, they would have naturally occurred in the Missouri, Kansas rivers?
Yes, likely. And like I said, we would have been right on the edge of that. And you kind of touched on the point there that, you know, Kansas doesn't have, aside from oxbows that used to exist, all impounded water in Kansas is man-made. So we're already talking about a non-natural system that they evolved in. So with that, you know, when we stock walleye in a lot of our reservoirs, they will do very well and thrive. But we do run into reproduction and recruitment issues due to the fact that they it's an unnatural system that they just didn't evolve in. So that's kind of gets into our production program of why we need to produce walleye versus, say, a largemouth bass or crappie population that we get established. And once that's established, they can pretty much naturally sustain themselves. And even in Kansas, we do have a few naturally reproducing populations. Cedar Bluff, Marion Reservoir, those are two reservoirs that kind of come to mind that for whatever reason, the walleye just seem to be able to reproduce and sustain themselves there.
What about Milford? I mean, it's what, the biggest reservoir in the state, but I know it's got some algae issues and some great big blue cats and wipers and predators. Like, is that walleye do well there?
Yeah, I think Milford kind of falls into the category with a lot of the reservoirs in the eastern half of the state where there is some level of natural reproduction and recruitment going on, but it doesn't seem to be enough to sustain levels that our anglers want. So Milford, Hillsdale, pretty much all the reservoirs in the eastern half of the state are getting stocked with walleye.
Okay.
That have walleye present.
Yeah. So the walleye in Kansas waters is the focus is mostly around the wants of the anglers.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
So if you had to walk that back, Luke, when did like walleye fishing become so prominent in Kansas then?
That's a good question. So, I probably should have done a little bit better research on this, but we first stocked walleye, in the late 40s. It was the first time we actually stocked walleye in the state.
Wow.
Okay. That surprises me.
Yeah. But you know, through the 50s and 60s, all the way up into, Hillsdale was impounded in 1982, which is the youngest of our reservoirs. So, but that period from the 50s and 60s, we had a big boom of these large federal reservoirs being created, and it opened up opportunities for these fish to be stocked. So we saw a lot more stocking happening once these reservoirs came online. At that time, we were probably importing a lot of those fish from other states. And I think our kind of stocking program that we have now really kind of took form in the 80s and 90s, and we've been doing that ever since.
Okay. So the Corps engineers came in and said, we're going to impound some of these tributaries in Kansas for various reasons, flood control, irrigation, agriculture, whatever. Somebody somewhere, probably Wildlife and Parks, took some direction, said, hey, let's put some fish in there. Walleye happened to be some of those species. And is Milford where some of those, the hatchery project, I know they have the hatchery there. Is that where some of that walleye work's going on? I mean, you mentioned collecting the eggs, but then you're not like in the back of a truck, like down below the dam, you know, like making the magic happen with these fish eggs, right?
Yeah, so I should probably go into that a little bit. So we have four hatcheries around the state. One that you mentioned right there is in below Milford Reservoir. We have another one at our headquarters in Pratt. We have one in the southeast corner of the state at Farlington, and then one in the southwest corner of the state at Meade. So each of those hatcheries play a role in our entire walleye production program. A lot of the fish go to Pratt and Milford primarily. So I guess I should go into kind of the different sizes of. Well, I can start at the beginning. We can go into the different sizes of fish that we're producing and kind of how that all falls in. You know, I said we're collecting walleye eggs at three different reservoirs. Hillsdale and Kerwin are primarily producing walleye, and El Dorado's producing sawgeye. So we will go out, we'll set nets in the dam there when the walleye are spawning. At Hillsdale, we will collect males and females in those nets and separate them right on the boat. We'll then, once we're done pulling in those nets, we'll bring those fish over. We've got a dock slip that the marina there is so graciously allows us to use during this time period. And we will put those males and females into tanks, and we'll strip the eggs right out of the females and then fertilize right there on the dock. And you know, there's a process for all of that, and the eggs will go into containers that will allow them to water harden for an hour, and then they get shipped in coolers to the hatchery same day. And those eggs will be in the hatchery for roughly 7 to 10 days before they hatch. And then some of those eggs are coming out a day or two later after that as fry. Actually, the broad majority of our walleye stockings are coming out as fry. And then some of those fish will be stocked into ponds there at the hatchery that we'll raise to fingerling size. And then we raise even more walleye to like an advanced fingerling size, which is usually roughly around 6 to 8 inches.
That's pretty wild, really. When you start to think about, so you guys are probably, you're probably keen on water temperature in the spring to know that these fish are going to spawn at a certain time. And somebody somewhere was like, you know what? I bet we could go use a net and scoop up a bunch of these fish and strip their eggs on a boat or a dock or whatever, and this will work. Like, it, you know, we'll make more fish in a can of water, and then we'll take them to other, you know. Like, I have a hard time, you know, sometimes with the task like changing a tire. So that whole process, that's pretty wild.
Yeah, and you know, this process, like I said, the walleye, they didn't evolve in these systems. So when they go through this process naturally, you know, fertilization and all that happens fine. But once those eggs are fertilized in the water, they've got a long road ahead of them, whether it's egg predation or when they immediately hatch, is there enough food for them to immediately feed on? Because sometimes, you know how Kansas springs can be, you know, when they hatch, they are immediately wanting to feed on phytoplankton and zooplankton. And if that's not occurring, if it's a cooler spring or whatever, then those fish are automatically starving. So, and then comes, you know, predation from other fishes. So it's a tough life being a young walleye for sure. So by doing this, we kind of jump some of those bottlenecks, and give them a better chance. And even then, I was trying to look up the numbers here, but our statewide egg demand was around 60 million eggs, so literally it's a you know, not putting your eggs all in one basket, you know. So it kind of spreads around the probability of success.
60 million eggs demand. So somebody somewhere weighed an egg or counted out, I don't know, a certain amount and said, because I'm sure, you know, you guys aren't like sitting there with a counter being like, oh, you know, 50,900,099, you know, like.
I don't know. You know, our culture staff at our hatcheries, they are so well versed in this and talented, uh-huh, and stuff. And I would have hate to have been that guy that figured out all those quantity measurements, but it's roughly 120,000 eggs per quart.
Per quart. Okay, so it's a unit, yeah, of volume.
Mm-hmm.
So you said the demand is 60 million eggs. So, like, state, park lakes, reservoirs, the core, who are the customers?
Mm-hmm. So yes, the eggs that the fish that we produce are only stocked back into our public water. So any waters that we're managing. That can be our larger federal reservoirs. It could be our state lakes. It could be some of our smaller community fisheries lakes that we cooperate with. And you know, I kind of glossed over that, but you know, some of these fish we are making into saugeye, which is a hybrid between a male sauger and a female walleye. And the reason for doing that is we found that in certain habitats, the saugeye, they thrive better in waters that are maybe more turbid or muddier. They grow faster in some situations. So in some situations, saugeye make more sense to be stocking in those waters. We also produce some sauger. We have a few water bodies. Perry's the main water body that we have sauger populations in, but there's also some sauger in Clinton, Melvern, Jeffrey Energy Center, and Banner Creek.
Wait, so I'm thinking about the article I think that Brittany and I read had to do with trying to raise trophy walleye, right? And so I know when we were at Wilson recently, some of whether that's changed or not, when Tommy Berger was there, I know some of his thoughts were that, you know, there needs to be a lake in Kansas where there's numbers, you know, so the length limit to keep those fish needs to be shorter. You know, we've got lakes where the length limits are longer. I don't know. I'm not an avid walleye angler, so I'm guessing there's some lakes that maybe have a slot limit, certain size fish go back or not. I don't know exactly, but I'm curious about that a little bit. Like, you know, what does that look like as far as, okay, yeah, we've got some reservoirs where we'll let people keep 15 and 16 inch fish, mm-hmm. maybe. And I know, like, I'm not too far from the Coffee County Fishing Lake, which is the Wolf Creek Nuclear Cooling Lake, and it seems like as soon as the fish get to the length that you can would keep them, like it used to be 18 inches, and then as soon as you started catching 18 inch fish, they bumped it to 19. Mm-hmm. So I guess how does that play into it, and then what would you like to speak to about that idea of growing, you know, a quote unquote trophy walleye, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you kind of touched on a lot of the ideas, you know, in what you were just saying. So it's been probably close to 10 years now, not quite 10 years. We had a big summit within the agency and kind of reworked how we did our crop, our walleye management. And we kind of laid out some management scenarios or objectives to what we would like to achieve. And, you know, within that, you know, a certain water body might be, like you said, trophy potential. And we would manage it a certain way to achieve that trophy potential. Being at Hillsdale, the manager there for so long, it was one of our broodstock lakes. So I managed it with a scenario to maximize our broodstock potential. We also have water bodies, where, like you said, that maybe numbers and harvest was more important. So, we would manage it with a regulation to try and achieve that. And a lot of that is done, by regulation and when you can keep the fish. Some of that has to do with individual, water body characteristics, whether it's, productivity for the reservoir or fish community. Talking about Wilson, you know, the big deal at Wilson is there's also white perch there. So, you want to keep a high level of predators in there to be on top of those white perch. And then we also, kind of keeping all these management scenarios in mind, we tried to look at things on a regional basis. So, just kind of talking about the northeast part of the state, you know, we had Hillsdale that we're managing for, you know, broodstock potential, larger females, so the 18-inch minimum has worked well to achieve that there. Now, you know, say an angler that wants to be more harvest oriented, you know, the nearest reservoir to Hillsdale is Clinton Reservoir. So with that in mind, we have a 15-inch minimum at Clinton Reservoir to allow somebody in this area, whether they wanted to go for more trophy potential or more catch rate potential, they're not having to drive too far across the state to get to either one of those. And, you know, it doesn't work out perfectly all across the state because there's a lot of factors that, you know, kind of compound into those regulations decisions. But we did try and kind of keep that in mind when we were creating these regulations.
I imagine there's no like one size fits all for that either.
Certainly, no. Yeah. No, each reservoir is kind of has its own issues and qualities that you know either hinder it or make it a good situation for walleye production.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was just talking to somebody before we started recording this, and I was talking about how I caught my walleye, and he goes, "Well, man, what's the keep length there at Wilson?" I couldn't remember off the top of my head. It was 15 or 18, something like that. And he goes, "I wonder why it jumps around so much, right?" Well, you just explained that. And he was then curious, you know, how long does it take for a walleye to get that big, right? So 22, 24. My buddy I was with caught a 28-inch walleye the week before that.
Yeah, so there's no easy answer to that question because different water bodies have different growth rates, you know, depending on forage availability and stuff like that. And the other thing about walleyes are sexually dimorphic. So females will grow bigger and faster than the males will. So at Hillsdale, you may have a 24-inch walleye that's a female, and it's could only be 4 years old, maybe. Mm-hmm. You could also have a 24-inch male that is closer to 10. So those growth rates differ, but not only between water body, but between sex, and it's hard to pinpoint that exactly.
So it sounds like that length of keep will be something that constantly changes based off of regional demands, but also production within each body of water.
Yeah, and that kind of depends too. I mean, some of them we've moved around more recently, but some of them, you know, once they're in place, they seem to work really well. And I guess that is we're always kind of monitoring and evaluating whether this regulation that we have in place now makes sense.
Interesting. So for an angler in Kansas, say a numbers and fish fry angler that's looking for like that fish fry or tacos or something, they're going to consume some walleye. I'm here in the eastern part of the state. Clinton Lake might be a good place to check out. The western part of the state, Wilson, is that fair?
Wilson has a phenomenal walleye population right now, one of the best in the state for sure. Kerwin is another one up in the northwestern part of the state. You know, great numbers up there.
Now, let's say that's all well and good, but I eat fish once or twice a year, and I'm really after it because I've got a boat and a truck to pull it, and way more tackle and rods than I know what to do with because I like to catch big fish and I want to catch a big walleye this year. Where would you send me?
Well, you know, again, you know, Wilson's kind of got the best of both worlds right now. Okay. It is a really good water body. Hillsdale, I would not put it up there with the numbers of some of our reservoirs in the state, but if you're looking for trophy potential, I would put it up against just about any water body in the state.
Okay. What about El Dorado? That's not too far from me. I'm just curious about that lake.
El Dorado is another one with kind of that both good numbers. I'm kind of looking at our our fisheries forecast right now, and on numbers, El Dorado ranks as our sixth in density, but it also has good potential over 20 inches.
Okay. So you mentioned a couple times we've talked about forage, water quality, you know, muddy water, clear water. What is a walleye like? You know, if they came out of a river system, and forage, I guess. So you'd also mention, you know, these fingerling walleye, they've got to have plankton, and you know, I don't know what that looks like. I presume they like to eat night crawlers because that's what everybody likes to use to try and catch them, right?
That's what I used.
Yeah. And then you mentioned, you know, a predator fish and the white perch in Wilson. So what makes these a good body of water for walleye in those stages?
Before you answer that, Luke, I want you to explain this because I had to ask because I didn't know. Fingerling and fry. Break that down for our listeners in case they don't know much about it like I did.
Yeah. So fry, like I said, those are generally just a couple day old, hatched out of the egg. And when you look at them, I don't know how many millimeters exactly they are, but they are nearly microscopic. They are very tiny.
So not the size of a French fry.
No. And fingerling is also kind of a bit of a misnomer. But those fish are coming out at about 40 millimeters, in size, when they come out. So not quite the length of an adult finger. and then, like I said, our advanced fingerlings, we're trying to get those to about, 6 to 8 inches.
Perfect. Thanks for explaining that. The guys on my boat were talking about that, and I'm like, y'all, I got to break that down for me a little bit farther.
So, yeah, so we've got these stages of fry, fingerling, I don't know what you call it, once they get to like a, I don't know, 10-inch fish compared to a 20-inch fish. And then, yeah, what are they eating, and what kind of water quality do you guys look for those? I guess different state, maybe it's the same. Maybe you're looking for muddy or clear water, on all stages, or it varies. I don't know what you know.
You know, they will do, they are, our reservoirs in Kansas kind of run a gradient in turbidity or muddiness, you know, and they will do all right in some of those situations. Like I said, in the I guess highest turbidity waters, and also waters that have a high flush rate, say like Tuttle Creek. You know, Tuttle Creek has these, you know, especially in rainy years, these giant fluctuations where it'll be, you know, up 25 feet and then back down in a 3-week time span. And in those situations, we've really found that the sagai seem to be better suited for those situations. Walleye, you know, they like a little bit more stable reservoir level, and do better in those situations. And both of them, sagai and walleye, you know, they're an apex predator, just like, you know, a wiper or a largemouth bass. So they will eat, you know, primarily in Kansas reservoirs, what's most abundant would be gizzard shad. So that would make up the primary amount of their diet once they become the age that they're feeding on fish. But I've noticed in gut contents of walleye, you know, bluegill, crappie, drum, they're eating all those. You know, if it's available and abundant, they're going to eat it.
What's that term? I heard it recently. Having to do with the size of a fish's mouth, like that, if it's something they can get in their mouth, that's kind of what limits their ability to forage.
Yeah, it's gape width.
Yeah, gape width.
Yeah.
But mine is like half a Big Mac, maybe.
Yeah.
That's my gape width.
Yeah,
it's an interesting concept. So, Luke, is there anything that we do we need to talk about? You know, we've talked about why the walleye, you know, kind of how they got started, what lakes are in, how you manage, the reason you manage, whether that's for length or length limit, trophy fish, or for numbers of more fish. When you guys are selecting, I mean, is there anything that you're doing like, hey, these are bigger fish? Like, are you sorting eggs? Like, these came from some bigger fish, and so they're potentially going to grow other bigger fish? Or is there anything to that, like genetically trying to select?
There's been lots of studies that look into that. I guess the short answer to that is no, we're not selecting for that. There's a lot of factors that kind of go into that. We kind of imagine say you have a 18 inch female that you're taking eggs from. Well, it's unknown whether that fish has the potential to be a 27 inch female. You know, she's just younger. We have a lot of, Hillsdale, like I said, has a good population of 25 inch plus females. So we're primarily taking eggs from those larger, older females. Those older females have more egg quantity. But we also kind of see slightly better fertilization and hatch rates from the younger females. So you get a little bit of a trade-off there. Short answer is no, we're not selecting for those things. A little bit more in-depth reason is because there's kind of a lot of compounding factors there.
Gotcha.
For fun here, just to give our listeners some reference, I just looked up who the record walleye in Kansas. Maybe you know this, Luke. Do you know what it is?
I believe it's right around 12 pounds.
This shows 13.6 pounds, 29 inches long, and was caught at Wilson Reservoir back in 1996.
Yeah. Yeah, it hasn't been beat for a while.
That's a big walleye.
Yeah. I at Hillsdale, I've seen a lot of 27, 28, and 29 inchers. I've never seen one break that 30 inch mark. That was always kind of my goal out there in the spring when we were collecting those females, was to see a 30 incher and never quite got it. A lot of 29s and a halves, but mm-hmm. never that 30 inch mark.
Wow. That's incredible.
So when you guys are sampling, like electrofishing and sampling along the shores or walleye, something, do you commonly get in those samples?
From time to time, it's seasonal. Mm-hmm. When we're doing our egg collection, we're using trap nets, which are basically this box frame that attaches. A lead is attached to the shore, and it runs about 50 feet out into the shore into a box frame, which funnels down into some hoops. Our standardized method for sampling walleye would be gill nets in the fall, which, if you're not familiar with gill nets, they're basically a monofilament net that is set out almost like a fence. We will also electrofish in the fall at night for walleye as well. That's primarily to catch age zero and age one walleye, but we'll see older walleye during that sample as well. It's not uncommon at all. So in the springtime, like right now, we're doing a lot of our largemouth bass sampling, which is electrofishing, right. And it's not uncommon to see walleye come up during those samples as well.
There's not a mortality issue with the gill nets in the fall?
A little, yes, not terrible.
Okay.
That gill nets are probably the highest mortality rate of all the gear that we run, it's not terrible. Okay. And that kind of depends on a number of factors too, water temps and stuff like that.
Sure. Interesting stuff. Well, Brittany, Luke, anything that we miss when it comes to Kansas walleye? Like, I kind of feel like we, I'm drinking out of a fire hose here a little bit.
I know. Yeah. Between this last weekend and this conversation, I feel like a walleye expert. What's, you know, this is something I learned obviously this weekend. What's your favorite way to catch walleye? Cause I've learned their strategy. I'm just curious, what's your, if you're out there by yourself on a free day, what are you, how are you going after them?
I like to, like I said, kind of drift crawler harnesses and bottom bouncers. Mm-hmm. And, one reason for that is if the walleye aren't cooperating, you can usually find white bass, channel cat, drum, sure. whatever, something's going to cooperate if the walleye aren't cooperating with that. I also like to troll crankbaits, whether, just on normal monofilaments or on lead line. Those would probably be my two preferred methods, but I've jigged for them. I've caught them while on live bait, while fishing for other species. There's a lot of different methods to go after them.
Mm-hmm. So here's another question is, do you think walleye is, you're pretty limited to only catching them if you're out on a boat?
That's seasonal as well. I have watched, guys, at the Causeway at Hillsdale, which is kind of on the, northeast arm, in the fall, and they will hammer walleye off the shore.
Okay.
So it's very, very seasonal.
Interesting. In the fall and not in early spring when the spawns like pre-spawn.
Those fish at Hillsdale, at least, I don't know, you know, each reservoir is a little bit different. They really go to the dam. We've looked for them in several other areas. But they focus on the dam there and really congregate there.
Cool.
And, you know, that's another good a time of the year where you have the potential to get one from shore. But it's a little bit more hit and miss that time of year too, because they're more interested in spawning than they are actively feeding.
Okay. Cool. Well, if you're ready, Luke, I got a few questions here for you. You guys might have spoiled a few of my lightning round questions, but that's okay. So question number one, and maybe I just spoiled my own question. Do you prefer, if you're out angling, I guess two hats, if you're out angling, number one, and then number two, at your everyday career as a fish biologist, do you prefer spring or fall for walleye? So number 1A, do you prefer as an angler spring or fall for walleye? And then 1B, do you prefer spring or fall as a fisheries biologist working with walleye?
And that is a tough one. I'll answer the angling one first, and I'd probably say fall if I had to pick between those two, but actually my favorite time to fish for walleye is from right about mid-May to mid-June.
Okay. Okay, so what about as a 1B, as a biologist?
As a biologist, that's a little bit different too. I would say in the spring when we are doing egg collection, you will put your hands on more walleye than you will any other time of the year.
Yeah.
It's kind of unreal during that time. But I do like the fall netting season a lot too. So it's tough to, it's like picking between two kids.
Yeah, that's fair.
We only need that.
Yeah. Question number two. You spoke about this. So you're going walleye fishing, whenever your favorite time of year is, like, let's just say that it's going to be an even up. You're going to catch this number of this size of fish, not depending on the method. So you get to choose jigs and crawlers or crankbaits. You prefer to use the jigs and crawlers or the crankbaits?
That's a good question too. I've kind of gone back and forth with this in my angling times. I'd probably say currently jigs and crawler, night crawlers.
Okay. Are you vertical jigging those, or are you like doing a troll with like a slow death hook or some kind of a flasher or something?
Both.
Okay. Very good. All right. Number three, this whole episode we've been talking about walleye, but is that your favorite fish to pursue, or what is your favorite fish to pursue?
I am very much an opportunist fisherman. Okay. I like to target different species depending on season.
So the fish that bites.
Yes, exactly. I like to crappie fish when they're on the bank. I like to fly fish bluegill when they're on the nest. I like to walleye fish kind of like you said during that time, that mid-May to mid-June. I really like blue cat and channel cat fishing in the summertime. I'll chase bass a couple times a year. If I get the opportunity to go out of state, I like to trout fish every once in a while. So I'm very much an opportunist of what's biting and what's available.
Perfect. There's nothing wrong with that. Question number four, what is your favorite body of water in Kansas?
My favorite, is Milford okay. Reservoir. It's been my favorite for a long time. The thing I always say about Milford is kind of what I was saying about the bottom bouncers is you can set out to fish for whatever species you're targeting that day. And, you know, the majority of the time that species is going to cooperate, but if that species not cooperating, you're going to find another species that is. And that's why Milford's reservoir is probably my favorite around the state.
Cool. Okay. So you're born, well, I don't know about born or raised, you lived most of your life, Kansas, Nebraska. You spent a lot of time on the Great Plains. What's your favorite time of year, like favorite season, on the Great Plains?
Oh, that's a tough one too. Like I said, opportunist, but, if I got to pick one, I'll pick summertime. I like the
long days of summer.
Yeah, long days of daylight.
Okay.
You don't love the heat?
The heat can wear on me quite a bit, but the more daylight, the better.
Yep, I agree with you on that one.
The summer's my least favorite. I'm an autumn guy, and then winter, spring, mm-hmm. and then if summer, I kind of went once we hit about
85.
Yeah, about Independence Day. I start have to think it to myself, like, how many days until autumn? Like, I can make it. I can get there.
You know? Or can I make it?
Yeah. If I could get a trip to the mountains in somewhere, you know. Yeah. Okay. Question number six. So we've talked about how you are opportunistic when you're angling, but, you know, you do prefer right now, at least, throwing jigs and worms. Or walleye, are you doing that with spinning tackle or some kind of a bait caster? What's your favorite setup right now?
When I'm walleye fishing, I've used both, but spinning tackle is probably what I'm normally using.
Okay.
More often than not.
Okay. Number seven. So you'd mentioned, you know, this variety of water, bodies of water that you've worked in, from big rivers. You said something about some small impoundments or streams, to reservoirs. So, you know, what body of water really holds your heart? Is that like, let's say, a small stream in the Flint Hills of Kansas, a big river across the plains in Nebraska, or a reservoir holding, you know, lots of opportunity somewhere in, you know, in the plains?
Oh, that's another tough one, because each one of those environments kind of offers its own unique special thing. If I had to pick one, I'd probably say large reservoirs in the Midwest.
Okay. Cool. You're doing great, man. Like, I think you're going to pass. number eight, last question. I don't want to sway this. I had with the family, maybe I take that out, or maybe your kids like to fish too. But when you're looking at a weekend of angling, are you preferring like a weekend of, you know, camping out with the family, hot dogs on the fire, catching some fish, or man, like I want to do a tournament, like show up and it's busy and there's lots of boats and competitive and I want to try and catch some big fish?
Oh, I am definitely more towards relaxing, family's time. I'm not much of a competitive angler.
Okay. I hear you. I'm with you. You know, it's interesting because there are folks that go both ways. I mean, there's people that really get into that tournament fishing for catfish or walleye or bass or crappie or whatever. And then, yeah, folks that are like, I just want to go out and if I catch a fish, great. But, you know, spending time out there and hanging out with the family. So,
yeah, that's definitely where I fall.
Yeah, it doesn't get much better than that. Well, Luke, thank you so much for joining us. I know I'm excited to share this episode with some of our folks that we were out on at the conference with this past weekend. But just in general, I think it was a wealth of information for our listeners, and hopefully they took some cool tidbits from it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yep. Luke, if before we close out here, if folks wanted to reach out to you, maybe they had a question about a walleye, a certain body of water, or something that we talked about on this podcast, is there a way that they can to reach out and connect with you?
Sure. They can reach me through my agency email, which is Lucas Kowaleski, LUCAS dot Kowaleski, KOWALEWSKI at KS.gov. If they've got a kind of a general question about a certain water body across the state, we also have a contact us section on our agency webpage, which is www.ksoutdoors.com. And they can ask that question and it'll go through a filtering system to get it to the person that needs to answer it.
Sweet. That's good to know.
Cool. Yeah, that's good stuff. Thank you, Luke. We appreciate it so much.
Yep. Thank you.
All right. We'll see you guys.
Yep, we'll see you guys out there.
Thank you.